You're listening to Shift, Human First Financial Guidance with Ross Marino.
Today, we are shifting the conversation with Candace Carlton from FICOM Partners. Hello, Candace.
Hi, Ross. It's so lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
Always great to have you on the show and get some marketing wisdom and everything else that you do over at FICOM. But before we dive in, how about if you take a minute and just introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. My name is Candace. If you hear a little bit of an accent, it's because I'm originally from Zimbabwe and I went to school in Cape Town, South Africa. I worked in the RIA industry my entire life, starting on the investment desk of Mercer Advisors. And then I worked at United Capital, building their digital network before they were acquired by Goldman Sachs. And I've been at FICOM for just over 4 years, building our Advisor Accelerator program to help advisors show up authentically and powerfully in their marketing to drive growth, as well as FICOM Labs, which is our strategy and innovation lab to solve different business problems for both RIA platforms and then firms and asset managers that support them. So I'm based in Orange County, California. I am addicted to coffee. I practice yoga. And to decompress at night, I'm often scrolling my phone and adding all kinds of clothes to a shopping cart on Nordstrom for my imaginary wardrobe.
Not a bad hobby out there. Now, I've surfed through FICOM. I've been a part of a couple of the programs, really impressed with what everybody's built over there. But the one thing that really stood out is the podcast. It is the New School Podcast. Not just because I think the name is fantastic, but listening to some of the podcast guests that you've had, some of the commentary that you and Meg add, it's really been impressive. It's kind of opened my eyes. And one thing I notice as I'm listening to it is you'll often compare the old school of marketing or the way advisors used to market with what you're calling this new school. So how about we start with what is the old school and why doesn't it work as well as it used to, if it worked well at all in the past?
Yeah, I love this question. So I think also something to note is new school is spelt with the school spelt with a K if you're trying to look it up. And when I first came up with that name, the team said to me, well, why are we spelling it that way? What does it mean? And I was like, I don't know. It's just, it's cool. It's different. And I went to actually look up the origin, and it's a throwback to 80s hip hop when things were like cool and they were starting to essentially challenge the status quo in music. So if we think about it like that, I think the old school, really not just marketing, but I think financial services, it was very exclusive, very elitist. Not a lot of people had access to it. They still don't, but I think that's changing. But it was typically, you know, a certain demographic in navy suits. And it was all about kind of like posturing. So lots of jargon, if we think about marketing, really about proving credibility, about keeping it exclusive, like I'm the expert, just do what I say. And if we think about healthcare as like a metaphor to that, that's how it used to be, right? You used to go to your doctor and you listened to whatever your doctor said and you didn't ask questions. And we have since learned that you actually have to advocate for yourself. You have to research. You have to find out what feels right for you. And I think that level of transparency, a collaborative relationship is really where the best financial advisors have moved to, right? So they're helping their clients come up with solutions so that they can have better lives. They're including their clients in the conversation. They're saying what matters to you versus like, this is what you're going to do because I'm the expert and you're going to get the best performance. And so their marketing in our industry has changed simply to reflect that, right? So if we think about modern consumer behavior, we are building trust online. Even if someone gets referred to, what's the first thing we will do? We will go on Google. We online stalk people. We check out their website. We subscribe to their content. And then we decide if we want to work with them or not. And essentially what we're looking for is in financial services, credibility, credentials, that's like table stakes. People are trying to identify, do they like you? Do they vibe with you? Can they trust you? Can they share those deep vulnerabilities and mistakes that they've made and insecurities about their money? Are you someone that they can call when there's a tragedy in their life, like their spouse dies? Are you someone that they can talk about their deepest desires and fear and money around? That's really what we're talking about when we talk about the new school, creating connection, human connection, reflective of what that relationship in person actually is like.
Well, now that I think about the spelling of new school, I instantly saw Cool in the Gang from the 80s right there. So you definitely spelled
it. You got
it. Yes. So well done. And I hope everybody else gets that. So you talk about connecting. You talk about authenticity. And I hear those words thrown around a lot in marketing. And it makes sense to me. So I wouldn't disagree at all. Of course, I want to connect. And I want to do it authentically. How do I do that?
So I think you're right. Authenticity got like to become like a little bit of a buzzword. Everyone was like, you got to show up authentically. And although I think there's a strong desire for people to show up authentically, what it also means is it opens a space for vulnerability, and not everyone's willing to do that. Like it's kind of hard. So when we say show up authentically, it's share your personal stories. And I know you're phenomenal at this, Ross. Like what got you into the profession? What's your real why? Who do you do your best serving? Like who is your best who? And then what are the types of conversations, the real conversations, and how is it that you're showing up with your clients on a day-to-day basis? And it's simply about taking that and translating it to a digital realm or your marketing. So it's kind of like, if we were to meet, let's say, Oprah Winfrey in real life, if we're saying that she showed up authentically in her shows and her TV and her Super Soul Sunday and everything, we would expect to experience her the same way as we did watching her on TV. So you just don't want a gap between who you are in person, what it's like to work with you, who you are every day, and then how you show up online. So when we're talking about authenticity, we're just talking about alignment. We're talking about being real, and we're talking about whatever your marketing looks like is the same experience. If I watch a video of you, Ross, or I check out your website, or I read some blogs, I get an experience of what it's like to work with you in person, so that when I meet you, I'm like, oh, I feel like I already know you. So really, when we're talking about authenticity, we're just talking about showing up in your marketing and on digital the way we would experience you in real life. So if you dress casual, we'd expect you to be casual in your marketing, not to be like in a suit and tie and super like professional online. But when we meet you, you're in golf shorts and you're like casual and relaxed, because we want to be able to experience you or get a sense of you before we even meet you.
One of my favorite FICOM nuggets is transparency trumps jargon every day of the week. And I guess as you're talking about authenticity, if I don't use jargon all day long when I'm speaking, and let's hope I don't, then I have to make it more conversational. Not always easy to do when you've studied for years, you have all this technical knowledge, and when somebody, a prospect or client, asks me a question, that jargon just wants to explode out of my head. It's really a challenge for people. I mean, how do I approach that?
So I guess the question is, you really have to think about the impact that you want to have, right? So if you have a client that loves the jargon, expects the jargon, and that helps them make meaningful decisions, then by all means, use the jargon. But I like to think about this. This is a funny story. So when I worked at United Capital, we had just started doing video, and our CEO at the time sent us for training on video. And our chief investment officer came with us because he was going to be on video and doing lots of presentations too. And he said to me, he said after a day, because we were separate, I said, how did it go? He said, they took my numbers away from me. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, I kept presenting on all the stats and all the numbers. And then they asked me, they're like, so what percentage do you think of advisors actually and clients actually care about the numbers that you're talking about? And he said, maybe 10%. And they said, so why are you leaning so heavily into it? Like, why are you talking to that 10%? So you want to talk to the 90%, whatever that is for you. And so if you want to have meaningful impact, and I think we all do, if you want your work to create change, then you have to connect with people in a way that they want to be connected with. And typically, most people are not connected through jargon. We're connected through deeper understanding, plain speak, transparency. And, you know, that's just the simple answer. There's actually nothing more to say about it.
As you were saying that, my typical ADD brain was going, well, which of my clients actually love to talk about this? And some of them do. There's two. I know exactly who they are. They love jargon themselves. They're highly intelligent people. They use multisyllabic words all the time. I'm Googling words when we have conversations because I don't know what they're talking about half the time. But I love it. It's fascinating to me. They love the jargon. But I think it's two. I don't know who number three would be. So I guess it's hard to not be faked out by those few people that love to ask those detailed, jargon-rich questions, to think that this matters to everybody when in fact it's actually just one or two people out there.
And I mean, and even as you say that, what I really hear is like you're saying, like, I like the jargon, they like the jargon, it's a fun conversation. But really what you're talking about is like, it's intellectual play for you, right? It's kind of like, it's playful, it's intellectual, you enjoy it. But the question is like, does it create impact? Maybe it does, or maybe it's just something that you guys enjoy like ping-ponging back and forth on.
Well, I think you're spot on, and I never thought of it that way. Both are from the medical field, and they have applications to my home life and family situations. So They go deep with me, and I'm researching, and it's interesting, and I'm figuring it out. So there's certainly some personal drivers there. It's a great way to point that out. Now, lastly, I want to talk about a topic that I know I've thought about over the years, and I think it's something that's maybe a little more nuanced than I approached it. And part of it is, what is marketing and how much should I put into it? What is PR? How much should I put into it? But then to step back and to approach it as a business owner, I only have so much time, energy, and money. And I want to use those resources for the maximum amount of impact. So in a finite world, if I have a practice that, let's say, it's mature, it's growing okay, and now I'm ready to really step up my marketing, or do I step up my PR? How do I work through that?
Yes, it's a great question. So I think there's a couple of considerations. I think the answer is different for anyone and everyone. So most of our industry spends 1-2% of total revenue on marketing, very low. Our clients at FICOM typically spend 6%. So that's our recommendation. I think that Kitsitz has done a phenomenal research paper on this, and he's done multiple presentations around the economics of marketing. And he says, look, don't look at the percentage spend, like get that right, but really think about the lifetime value of a client. What is the lifetime value of a client? So if the lifetime value of a client is $60,000, is it worth $10,000 to get them? Most advisors would say yes, but they don't spend that. So I think we're experiencing right now, what I'm seeing is a shift in how advisors are thinking about marketing. I think historically, and if we think about old school, marketing was your brand. So what it looked like, your logo, you know, having pretty designs and like, you know, showing that you were legitimate. Today, marketing is about being in conversation with your prospects and clients. It's really ensuring that everything that you're doing is creating meaningful change, connection, but growth. So you don't do anything unless it's actually helping you achieve your goals. The question I'd be asking myself as an advisor is like, how committed am I to growth, really? So am I going to be able to continue growing exclusively through referrals, or do I see the consumer behavior changing? Do I see the need for a digital first approach? Do I see that referrals are going to validate me online and I should have some content to bring them in the door? If the answer is yes, then really be thinking about the lifetime value of a client and how much you're willing to invest to drive those growth goals. When we think about marketing versus PR, we like to really think about modern marketing. So modern marketing is your authentic, you're targeted, so you're not going off to everyone. You're really clear on who you serve, and that everything that you do from a marketing spend perspective is driving to meaningful growth and ROI. So if it's not driving to meaningful growth or ROI, it might be something that you either need to fix or adjust, or you throw out because it's not really worth it. When we think about marketing, it has to create change. If it doesn't create change, it's not working. The question you asked is marketing versus PR. So marketing, the beautiful thing about marketing is it's on channels that you own, right? So access is no longer limited. Before it used to be like PR played a big role because you needed to be on people's television sets, right? You wanted to be on the news or the media or what, or in the trade publications. And those things are still important if you need third-party validation. But now no one is preventing you from launching a podcast, launching your YouTube channel, sending out emails, being on social media. We have more control than we've ever had to get our message out in a way that we want to get out to the people we want to get it out to. So the mix of what is marketing versus PR has significantly shifted. We like to think right now is PR. PR is really about, as I said, you know, getting an investment news or RA biz or whatever that is, or Barron. So some really credible, beautiful places that you could potentially be. And it's valuable for third-party validation, but it's really a tactic within the marketing mix. So all of those things will build awareness. People will get to know who you are, but then what? So you have to have a marketing strategy and a foundation to be able to actually implement effective PR. So what does that mean? You should have some content of your own that you're distributing, your YouTube, your podcast, your TikTok, your blog, whatever that is. You should have some kind of long-form content, social media, and then a really compelling initial offer for prospects to come in the door. If all of that is working and you're getting the clients that you want, that you love, and you want to supercharge it, then I really see that there's a place for PR. I think traditionally PR was kind of a sexy sought after thing. You thought if you like get this one hit wonder, then like all of your business problems would be taken care of. That's no longer the case. I don't know that it ever was, but I would recommend to advisors, tell your story, add value, create content that speaks to your clients, and then simply put it on your public channel so that it speaks to prospects as well.
This day and age with the technology, it really is amazing compared to even 10 years ago, how easy it is to create content, to get it out there, to be authentic and have your voice. I'm, of course, a fan of outsourcing and leveraging partners. So when I look at marketing, I don't want to try to figure it out on my own. I read the book Story Brand, thought it was fascinating. Then we sent someone to one of their conferences. So it's like, great, I'm glad I know it, but you don't want to figure all this stuff out.
That's
on
wonderful. So yeah.
I think it's great to leverage partners. And I just love the idea and the way you explain it, that start with the marketing, see how that goes, that third party is the PR is really something you add on top for third party. It's just a great way to explain it.
That's wonderful. And, you know, talking about resources, we do offer free resources for advisors, which we love to share. So we've got a Dear FICOM, which is like an advice column, like a Dear Abby advice column, but for financial advisors and all things marketing. So you can submit any marketing question and our team of coaches will actually create a video, like giving you some advice and feedback on what to do. And we also have our monthly marketing masterclass where we have all kinds of outside experts come on. So how to create, like all the things we talked about, how do you create that super specific, compelling offer? We'll give you specific guidance on how to do it. Both of those resources are free for any advisor contemplating these questions and really wanting to focus on their marketing.
We had someone on our team attend one of the marketing masterclasses, and it was on video. And this person was hired as an intern 10 plus years ago to do some video work for us. Loves the tech, loves the video. I remember him coming out of the class halfway through and coming into my office and saying, I can't believe how much I actually learned. He was only halfway through. And for him, it wasn't from a shock of I learned something. He was in it. But wrap it together and think of it not just from execution, which is what you know when you're younger, but the why, you know, not just the how and to do it. It was really helpful. So I'm glad that you guys do that. Appreciate the work that FICOM's doing. And as always, Candace, great to have you on the show. Hope to have you on again.
Thanks, Ross. Appreciate being here. And for anyone listening, I love to connect with advisors. So you can find me on LinkedIn Connect. We'd love to have you listen to the podcast, The New School, as well. Ross was one of our guests. Love everything that's going on at Shift and so excited to be a part of this community.
Thank you for listening to Shift with Ross Marino. Please visit humanfirst.live to learn more. This show is for general information purposes only and is not intended to provide recommendations or advice. Speak with a legal, tax, or financial advisor before making any decisions. Past performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results.